It's one of our favorite movies, The Sound of Music. Full disclosure, young people, have any of you ever seen The Sound of Music? Oh, you have. Great. It's good, isn't it? Ella Ray saw it. You liked it, didn't you? If you haven't seen The Sound of Music, you need to watch The Sound of Music. I'm sure those of you listening on the radio have seen it, and you know the story. It's about a free-spirited postulant at an abbey in Salzburg named Maria. The nuns did not know what to do with a problem like Maria. And so they decide to send her to the home of Captain Von Trapp, whose 7 mischievous children are in need of a governess. Considering they've run all of the previous ones off, she will be the 12th since their mother died, and they do not intend for Maria to stay very long. But if you remember the movie, recall what happened the very first night. There was a thunderstorm. And in the thunderstorm, as the lightning and the thunder started to rumble, the girls run to Maria's room first. She asks, "Where are the boys?" And they say, "Oh, boys are brave." And about that time, there's a tremendous clap of thunder, and the boys appear. Although they say, "We were not scared, we just came to make sure you are okay." And then there's another loud thunderclap, and all of the children are in Maria's bed. Little Gretel asks, "Why does it do that?" And Maria said, "The lightning talks to the thunder, and the thunder answers." And then Gretel says, "But why does the thunder get so angry? It makes me want to cry." And that's when Maria says, "Well, whenever I'm feeling unhappy, I try to think of nice things." "Well, what kind of things?" "Well, let me see. Nice things. Daffodils, green meadows, skies full of stars, raindrops on roses, and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles, and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things." It was a thunderstorm that bonded Maria and the children. It was in a thunderstorm that Martin Luther made a vow to become a priest, a vow that would eventually change the world. It was a powerful storm on the Sea of Galilee that caused the disciples to question, "Who is this man? Who is this man that even the wind and the sea obey him?" And that was when Jesus established his lordship over all of nature. Thunderstorms can be destructive. If you read the 29th Psalm, thunderstorms can be deadly. 41 years ago, on Easter weekend, a group of Lexington men and their sons went camping in the North Carolina mountains. There was a group of 19. It included Dr. Bob Team. Robin was there. I bet David was there too. Bob Grubb, his sons Adam and Clay. Dr. Sid Hood was there. And Lexington's mayor, Harry Anderson. Harry Anderson was only 45 years old. He had just been elected by acclamation. Everyone was excited about the leadership that he brought to the city. Most of the campers were huddled under a tarp at the center of the campsite, but Harry Anderson was standing next to a tree where they had erected a wood stove. Then came a bolt of lightning. When Maria said, "The lightning talks to the thunder, and the thunder answers," she's echoing the words of the psalmist in today's text that Kay read for us. "The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord upon many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty." Now there's something that the psalmist did not know, that Maria probably did not know, but I bet these young people know. You know how thunderstorms are formed. You understand the scientific thing. You probably do much better than me. On average, there are 45,000 thunderstorms every single day on planet Earth. They are among the most powerful forces that we know. Now, basically, a thunderstorm is an atmospheric stabilizer, because what happens is you have two masses of air. Now, correct me. Ethan, you got this. Correct me if I'm wrong. But there's a mass of hot air that collides with a mass of cold air. By the way, which one is on the bottom? The hot air or the cold air? Hot. You got it right. A plus. You don't even have to go to school on Saturday anymore. You've got this. And that's why in the summertime when it's hot and it's steamy, we say, oh, we may see some thunderstorms. Because what happens is you have the hot air down close to the surface, close to the ground, and then up above, you have a mass of cold air. When this happens in order to rebalance the atmosphere, what the thunderstorm does is it pumps the hot air upward and the cold air downward until the atmosphere evens out. And when that happens, the thunderstorm disappears. There's no need for it anymore. It dies out. But the way it happens is amazing. The forces within the thunderstorms are so great that you have particles of energy that collide together with such a tremendous force that they exchange electrical charges. Now, it's been a long time since I've studied this kind of stuff. So you have all of these particles. You have particles that are stripped of their electrons. You have other particles in which they are infused with electrons. What this means is you have positively charged particles and you have negatively charged particles. And when you have one way up there and one way down here, something is going to happen to bring them together. And that is called lightning. Does that make sense? A lightning bolt is a high voltage spark of energy. It's not just a spark of energy. It equalizes those forces. You can tell I'm not a scientist. It only lasts 30 microseconds. But did you know that one bolt of lightning can peak out at 1 trillion watts of energy? A trillion is one with 12 zeros behind it. And the surface temperature of a bolt of lightning can exceed 50,000 degrees, which is over 5 times the hotter than the surface of the sun. It was the power of this lightning bolt that struck Harry Anderson. Lexington's mayor was killed instantly. Almost everyone in that camping group experienced some type of injury. Bob Grubb was hospitalized with serious burns. It was a life-defining moment that none of those men, I don't think any of those men are still with us, or their sons who are still with us, will never forget. The psalmist didn't know all of that when he wrote, "The Lord's voice is over the waters. This God, the glorious God, thunders. The Lord's voice is strong. The Lord's voice is majestic. The Lord's voice breaks the cedar trees. He shatters the cedars of Lebanon." That is why the psalm writer, the hymn writer, said, "O Lord, my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder. Thy power throughout the universe displayed." What is my response? The only thing I can do is sing. The only thing I can do is shout. "Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art." Richard Baucom, who has written a book titled The Bible and Ecology, he calls this cosmic humility. In a moment like a thunderstorm, a powerful storm, or even when we're just marveling at the extent of the universe, he calls that moment cosmic humility. And he said that's something we all need in life. We need a cosmic humility to recognize that our place in this world is a limited one. We need that humility to walk more lightly upon the earth with more regard for the life that is around us. We need that humility to recognize the unforeseeable risk of technology before we destroy the world in pursuit of technological fixes to all of our problems. We need that humility to know ourselves as creatures within God's creation, not lords over God's creation, knowing that only God is God. For those of you who studied this in Sunday school this morning, I thought it was interesting that my friend Tony Cartledge, he titled this lesson, he didn't talk about turmoil, he didn't talk about power, he didn't talk about the thunderstorm in the title, he talked about the end of the psalm and he titled it A Prayer for Peace. Because that's the way the psalm ends, with a prayer or an affirmation for peace. Some of you might remember a few years ago in the Bible study that Evelyn Kepley started so many years ago, we studied the Psalms. And I introduced you to a concept of the Psalms presented by my old buddy Walter Brueggemann, who said there are three types of Psalms. There are Psalms of orientation, the way life is supposed to be. And then there are psalms of disorientation, the way life often results when we find ourselves turned upside down by illness or sickness or tragedy. But then there are psalms of new orientation that lead us into hope of a better day. And one of the best examples, the King of Love, my shepherd is, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, the 23rd Psalm. It begins with orientation. This is the way life is supposed to be. Green pastures, still waters, paths of righteousness. But what happens to all of us in life? Illness, loss, tragedy, heartache, and we find ourselves walking in darkness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of darkness, of death. That is disorientation. But that's not the end, because you know how the psalm ends. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Hope, new orientation. It's interesting that Walter Brueggemann, this psalm to him is a psalm of new orientation. Disorientation in the destructive power of the storm, but new orientation in a prayer for strength and a prayer for peace. I think the most telling verse in the 29th Psalm is verse 9. And the 9th verse comes after the psalmist has described all of this incredible power that we were talking about, all the trillion watts of energy and 5 times hotter than the surface of the sun. The voice of the Lord makes the oaks to just twirl. He can snap an oak tree with the power of the storm. The forests are stripped bare. And in his temple, what is the response of the people? What do people shout? What do people proclaim? It's not, oh my goodness. It's not, did you see that? It's not even, wow. It's glory. They shout glory. Because in the storm they see the power of God. They shout glory. Jesus talked a lot about glory. But you know, when we think of glory, we think of glory as being success. We think of glory in winning the championship. We think of glory when we make all A's. We think of glory when we succeed. We think of glory when we're able to retire with a big account. We think of glory when our children are successful. We think of glory when we have a crown on our head, not when we're carrying a cross on our back. But Jesus started talking about glory in the upper room when one of his own was betraying him, when one of his closest friends was about to deny him, when he washed the disciples' feet, when he gave his life for all of us. That was his glory. Let me ask you this. If a thunderstorm in nature is a way of stabilizing the atmosphere, could it be that in the storms of life, it is God's way of stabilizing us as His children? We can so easy get life out of perspective. One of the great joys and privileges of being a minister is through the years, I have been with people who are facing unbelievable hardship and suffering and pain and disease. But I have seen so many of these people that the worse the disease, the stronger their faith. And I have seen them in times of sickness and sadness to be able to say, glory. One such person that I was privileged to meet a number of years ago was Janet Hamrick Boyce. When Dan and Jean Hamrick moved to Lexington, and Dan, that was a number of years ago, Dan and Jean moved to town. They live down here on West 3rd Avenue, active and involved in the church. And that's when I first met Janet. But then Jean became ill. And her illness was a long, prolonged type of illness before her death. that's when I really got to know Janet. Because Dan, during Gene's illness, Dan was always there, always faithful, always caring for Gene. But most of the time when I would go up there to see them, Janet was there. Now, Janet lives in Fuquay Varina. But she was so faithful, always there. And I knew that she had a strong faith. But what we did not know was about the time her mother died, Janet was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And it was a disease that she dealt with for a number of years that progressively got worse and worse and worse. But as it did, her faith got stronger, more intense, more powerful, more true. She finally got to the point, and Dan's given me permission to share this with you. The Lou Gehrig's disease had robbed her of all of her physical abilities. She couldn't move. She couldn't eat. But through modern technology, she was able to use her eyes to focus on a letter, and that was the way that she would send text messages. And Dan, Janet, were always Pittsburgh Steelers fans. Dan showed me a string of texts that he and Janet shared with each other during a Steelers game last fall. But the amazing thing was, the only way she had to communicate was with her eyes. Even though she was dying with this terrible disease, she was able to express her faith with a beautiful, beautiful series of reflections and poems. And I want to share one with you that I think summarizes everything we're talking about. It's titled Life to the Full. I have frustrations in daily life. My disease causes me unneeded strife. Imagine a life not able to speak and struggling with both hands getting weak. But God is with me and brings me success. I know Jesus gives me His very best. He helps me with the big things and the small. But if the Lord didn't help me at all, I have the joy He put down in my heart. He paid the price for sin on my part. I trust Him to be my sin revealer. And Jesus is the ultimate healer. So ask me how I have life to the full. If I could, I would give you an earful. Dan, Janet continues to inspire us.